All right, my name is Hugh Iglarsh. I'm speaking in defense of shyness. Thank you for coming out here to make me very nervous today. I appreciate that. We'll see. Let me start with a couple of quotes which give a kind of cross-cultural view of shyness. The first is from Isaac Bashevis Singer. "I don't think people should get over being shy. It is a blessing in disguise. The shy person is the opposite of the aggressive person. Shy people are seldom the great sinners. They allow society to remain in peace." The second is by the British psychologist F.A. Hampton, writing in 1927. "Shyness is so common, at least in this country," meaning the UK, "that we tend to accept it as something inborn, as a characteristic part of the charm of youth, and as evidence, when it persists into later years, of a certain fineness of character. It seems even to be a trait, perhaps not wholly to be deplored, in the national temperament." So here I am defending shyness from a crate to a large and volatile audience, many of whom are waiting for an opportunity to add their own contribution to the discussion. It's not an ideal situation for anyone who has ever felt shyness, also known as interactive inhibition. According to research, this takes in 93% of the population, not 92%, not 94%, 93%. The shyness research industry is very precise. Who, I wonder, are the 7% who have never felt that tickle in the stomach, the prickly warmth creeping up the face? I think I know. They are the ones who write the self-help books, attempting to cure the common experience of 93% of the human race. But strangely enough, I'm not the first person to soapbox about shyness. In fact, there's a bit of a tradition. A while ago, a soft-spoken but rather charismatic fellow gave a pretty good speech that really quieted him down. It had an interesting line: "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." Not the kingdom of heaven, that was the poor in spirit, but the big solid earth itself, the earth we share, meek and non-meek alike. It's counterintuitive, I think, at least according to the Gospel of Dale Carnegie. Why did he say that? What did he mean? I'll get back to that question in a moment. But for now, I'd like to talk a bit about the idea of shyness, what it means in our culture and others, how it's represented in the literature of psychology and self-help. Specifically, how shyness went from a blessing 2,000 years ago to an official, professionally accredited, Blue Cross reimbursable disease today. I'm interested in the politics and sociology of shyness, the path by which reticence and tenderness of feeling and a preference for solitude became, in the words of shyness guru Philip Zimbardo, a public health danger that appears to be headed toward epidemic proportions, or what Psychology Today dubbed the disorder of the decade, behind only depression and alcoholism. The National Institute of Mental Health has gotten into the act, calling excessive shyness one of the worst neglected disorders of our time. According to Christopher Lane, a professor at Northwestern and author of the interesting study, Shyness: How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness, shyness as certified pathology began only about 30 years ago, when social phobia and avoidant personality disorder were inserted into the then current Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, better known as DSM-3. As Lane puts it, in this 500-page volume, the Bible of psychiatrists the world over, the introverted individual morphed into the mildly psychotic person whose symptoms included being aloof, being dull, and simply being alone. "Gone are the days," says Lane, "when we could value exuberance and shyness, as well as a vast repertoire of similar moods. Today, many psychiatrists and doctors assert that those who aren't sufficiently outgoing may be mentally ill." So my friends, I ask you, what can one say of the tolerance and horse sense of a nation that supports a cottage industry of shy no more self-help books with titles like Triumph Over Shyness, Conquering Shyness and Social Anxiety, The Hidden Face of Shyness, Goodbye to Shy, 85 Shy Busters That Work, and The Shy Child, A Parent's Guide to Preventing and Overcoming Shyness from Infancy to Adulthood? Just reading the titles produces a certain hysteria that we know from TV commercials, the kind that suggests that choosing the wrong brand of light beer raises some very deep and Darwinian questions about one's manhood. What bothers me is the lack of balance. Here are some titles that do not appear on the shelves of Barnes & Noble. Mouthy No More, Overcoming the Need to Dominate Social Gatherings. Stop Thinking About Yourself So Much, Daily Affirmations That You're Not the Center of the Universe. The Aggressive Extroverted Personality, its causes and cure. Conquering solitary anxiety syndrome and looking out for number two. Things just get worse when you dip into these anti-shyness books. The preface to Triumph Over Shyness begins gently, almost shyly. There's nothing wrong with being shy. The world needs some quiet, thoughtful, introspective people. People who don't shoot off their mouths first and ask questions later or never. People who are reluctant to intrude and careful not to offend. But then the author begins to bare his teeth. So if you're shy and proud of it, read something else. Buy this book if you want to and give it to someone who's bothered by social anxiety. Because there's the rub. Many people aren't happy about being shy. They find it prevents them from expressing themselves, from making friends, and from enjoying life to its fullest. For some people, shyness is a cocoon. It's safe and warm and quiet, but it can also be confining, dark, and lonely. If you choose to triumph over shyness, this book will help you break free. Is it just remotely possible that what makes shy people unhappy about being shy is the existence of books like these and the cultural presuppositions behind it, suggesting that shyness is not a cultural trait, not one mode of being among others in the spectrum of human possibility, but rather somewhere between a crippling disability and a moral failing? What is it about shyness, a condition that harms no one and does not generate congressmen, Tea Party screamers, Fox TV commentators, or other noxious social problems, that inspires reams of frenzied self-help prose? The shyness discourse is, like all popular psychologies, a conformity and adjustment mechanism, a perspective that sees individuation and authenticity and critical distance as a problem rather than a goal. Jonathan Berendt, author of Beyond Shyness, goes so far as to tell us that, quote, there's really no such thing as shyness, just social anxiety, a psychophysiological response you can learn to control. Skinner couldn't have put it better. There are no shy rats, just badly conditioned ones. There's a totalitarian impulse behind such pronouncements, like the Turkish government explaining to the world that there is no such thing as a Kurd, only mountain Turks who have forgotten their language. Therefore, to oppress them is to help them recover their true selves. It is a logic that Stalin and Pol Pot would well understand. To understand what it is we need to conform to and react against, let's see what shyness is associated with, first in the book of Matthew, and then in Roger's Thesaurus. In the Bible, the meek are grouped together with the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers, and the salt of the earth. In the thesaurus, shy is listed next to cowardly, unheroic, spunkless, afraid of one's shadow, faint-hearted, hen-hearted, lily-livered, unmanly, unwarlike, unsoldier-like, etc. Also shrinking, coy, shame-faced, in a word, effeminate. There has been a shift over time in the idea of the acceptable personality, from the spiritually open and humble biblical model to the openly grasping and opportunistic ideal of the present. Says Berendt, if you sit there waiting passively for the day when your shyness will disappear, you will miss out on all the things that, deep down, you really want. And I am not just talking about having fun. In our ever-changing economic climate, your job security and career growth depend on your ability to interact productively, to initiate dialogue, stand up for your ideas, and negotiate compromise. Your ability to evaluate the social chemistry of the workplace and to establish and maintain your position on the team may well determine your career success. Most people must work with others, and cooperation demands social skills and confidence. So shy people, be afraid, be very afraid. If you're not an effective office politician, you might as well call it quits now. The message is that shyness creates misfits and thus threatens the ruination of America and the military-industrial complex for which it stands. Of course, social paralysis is a problem. It's a neurosis, a real mental illness, pointing to inner traumas and conflicts that go deeper and require more insight and support than the self-help books can possibly provide. But to treat garden variety shyness, which is simply sensitivity in action, as a pathology, is to transform psychology from a healing profession into an engineering function, an attempt to flatten and squeeze the human personality into socially acceptable shapes, as though it were so much silly putty. And the squeezing always goes in one direction, a ratchet-like movement towards aggressive meism and forced and constant gregariousness. I'm sorry about this. Yeah. Oh. Triumph Over Shyness does ask, is there such a thing as not having enough shyness? Oh, Is there such a thing as not having enough shyness? This has not been studied to the best of our knowledge. But we might speculate, for example, that someone who isn't shy enough might be oblivious to the feelings of others and come across as insensitive or callous. At its extreme, might some people with very low shyness become criminals because of their fearlessness of others? Nobody knows. So until somebody funds a longitudinal, double-blind, fully placeboized experiment on the social anxiety levels of mafia hitmen and bank robbers, we just don't know whether aggressive people are more prone to crime and violence than wallflowers. But why hasn't such a study been conducted? After all, over the years, even more absurd research has been blessed with grants. The reason, of course, is that psychologists study deviation and exceptions in problems, not social norms and ideals, which are natural and hence invisible. An advertising-driven business culture needs aggressive extroverts to function, although it will call them self-starters rather than pushy egoists or quasi-psychopaths. Those prone to reflection, introspection, empathy, and awareness of complexity are road bumps in a system based on self-aggrandizement rather than communal harmony. The mainstream culture sees this perfectly normal, the accumulation of 3,000 Facebook friends, collected like box tops and redeemed later for vague social prizes. It has less use for the creative and open-ended self-exploration that is the specialty of introverted people, and the forging of real and personal bonds, which can distract from the unending trivial pursuits of a treadmill consumer entertainment culture. This is just scraping the surface. It's no surprise that pop psychologists of industrial society see as the enemy any flavor of humanity that doesn't embody the assembly line virtues of speed, power, and efficiency. Going a little deeper and remembering what Mr. Roget said about the connection between shy and effeminate, we see the real emotive roots of this intense hostility to shyness. It's a reflection of the culture's aversion to the feminine. A society defined by universal competition desires a generic worker consumer, and is only contempt for the intricate balance of yin and yang, the dance of complementary differences that drive nature and art alike. Shyness is the marker of the feminine side of the soul, the subtler and more emotional and inward-turned and mystical and embodied aspect, just as aggressiveness is the emblem of the warrior male, which we all now must aspire to be, what with the ever-changing economy and all, which never seems to change toward greater cooperation and lesser competition. Until relatively recently, shyness and the ability to blush were seen as no liability in girls, but rather as a sign of innocence and hidden emotional depth. Marshall McLuhan discusses the crucial role of the fashion industry in this transformation. The visual and not particularly voluptuous character of commercially sponsored glamour is perhaps what gives it so heavy a narcissistic quality. The brittle, self-conscious pose of the mannequin suggests the activities of competitive display rather than spontaneous sensuality. And the smartly turned out girl walks and behaves like a being who sees herself as a slick object rather than is aware of herself as a person. McLuhan is definitely onto something here. When I see a title like Triumph Over Shyness, it registers more like the triumph of cultural narcissism. The dynamic, extroverted winner character, endemic to capitalist enterprise, is a performative and presentational personality, a constructed and constricted set of expressions and attitudes designed for outward consumption and admiration. It is ambition dressed for success, a synthetic image suited to a system that objectifies and commodifies everything it touches, including the human soul. In such a context, shyness is a kind of unconscious gesture of resistance, suggesting that the highly sensitive introverted person isn't playing quite the same game as the success-driven corporate climber, that it isn't the only game in town. In a society where capitalist individualism is treated as something given on Mount Sinai, such a position, however shyly advanced, amounts to heresy and must be challenged and condemned by the inquisitors of the mass media and the therapeutic establishment. I once had the misfortune of knowing a woman who was never shy, always on, and never, ever real. Perhaps you know the type. It is not as uncommon as one wishes it were. The confidence-brimming, beaming backslapper or party girl is a persona, a mask, covering a calculating intention. The shy person may be awkward, but it is in most cases an awkwardness born of a hyper-awareness of the other person, an attentiveness quite the opposite of the narcissist's insatiable demand for attention and worship. There is a connection between shyness and sincerity. Shyness is sometimes a mask, but more often it is a glimpse of the real personality. If for no other reason than nobody wants to be perceived as shy, in a culture that tends to perceive shyness as inferiority, as a failed persona. It is not so everywhere. In China, the Mandarin word for shy or quiet can be translated as good or well-behaved. The word sensitive also signifies having understanding, a most praiseworthy trait in a densely populated land. In China, it's the shy and sensitive kids who are picked first and are most popular, according to research studies. In India, similarly crowded, shyness also has cultural value. It is in our own culture that shyness is seen as a plague, reflecting an unbalanced view of life. Acceptance of shyness can help us find that balance. I am not praising a life of Cistercian silence or cultural autism, but rather an openness to the range and validity of human temperaments, and to our own often suppressed need for at least occasional solitude and contemplation and space. This to me seems an essential form of freedom, the freedom to turn inward and away. I wonder if beneath the hostility and aversion to shyness is something else, what I would call shyness envy. For while shy people can adapt and accommodate to the demands of society, because it's not hard to fool an extrovert, the opposite is not the case. Depth is not easily faked, and neither is sensitivity. The introverted have access to both worlds, which is why we exist and why society needs us. We can only play our important role fully when we go beyond the bromides of self-help to the deeper truths of self-acceptance. Thank you.